Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome to the Phil Hendry Show, our world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're also online at philhendryshow.com, and we're online with a video cast each and every night. We also have a daily podcast the next day, as well as our live video cast right now, our live broadcast right now. And we have a featured classic podcast every day from our archives. The Backstage Pass is the way to go. And, of course, to the gentleman that I was talking to this weekend over Twitter, because that's what we do on the weekends, don't we? We don't interact with our families and our friends anymore. We talk to strangers on Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. We don't really. Well, I mean, I don't.
Did you belch?
Yes, I did.
How come she can't?
Because I'm the host. When you people belch, you give me fair warning.
You see, that's just... it's not fair.
What, are you going to cry?
Well, I just don't think it's fair.
Well, what are you crying for?
I'm not crying so much as I'm outraged. I'm just shaking from the outrage.
Get out of here. You're shaking from the outrage of not being able to belch without...
Miss Elliot, it's hypocritical.
Oh, get out of here, hypocritical. I'll tell you again, and then I don't want to say it again. Nobody belches on the mic except for me. You understand?
That's unfair.
Oh, quit bawling. God, you guys are like kids. Like I just said something like, you know what, I'm going to watch my favorite TV show, even though I told you you could if you studied hard.
Well, it's not much different.
So belching on mic means that much to you?
If it is the difference, Phil, between belching on mic and ripping a hole in my esophagus, never mind, forget it.
Good God, what are you eating that would cause you to tear a hole in your esophagus if you hold a belch back?
Don't, you don't know, Mr. Henry. You see the mustard that they bought?
The what?
You see the mustard?
Did you see the hot mustard we bought?
No, I didn't see the hot mustard you bought.
But probably with the gas on that.
Well, then maybe you ought to back off on the kind of mustard you buy.
You laugh now, but I'll tell you if...
Yeah, if that stomach, that alien.
The thing in the alien, Phil.
The alien coming out of that guy's stomach, that was from gas? Or what are you trying to tell me?
No, but I'm saying, what if the day ever comes...
They make the mustard stronger.
You guys are high on something. I don't know what it is and what you're doing before you come on the air, but knock it off, okay? It's like you cats are... It's like you're breathing laughing gas or something.
It's just the hypocrisy. Never mind. I won't bring it up again. Thank you.
Yeah, but...
Bud, don't bring it up.
Thank you very much.
So you don't care?
No, I don't care. No, I don't. I don't care. Nope. Nope. Not me. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Hendry. I don't care. No. I do apologize for belching. I didn't have that spicy hot mustard, whatever these guys are talking about. I did have some Gouldens, but that's no big thing.
Well, the Gouldens is...
That'll rip into you.
Gouldens? Gouldens is nothing.
Yeah, you don't think you're so big because you eat all the hot stuff.
Yeah, I do eat a lot of hot stuff because I was married to a woman that cooked that way. Every girlfriend I've ever had cooks with spices. I don't know what it is. Is there something significant about that? Every woman I've ever known, and they've all been great women. I've had my ups and downs, but the quality women in my life all cook with just pounds of cayenne pepper and every kind of hot... It's nuts, and it's never hot enough for them either. They always got to have it hotter.
Well, that could be your problem, you know, because while you say every woman you've ever known, you've had nothing but failure with women.
That's true, Mr. Henry. They cook with the hot stuff, causing a gas problem.
You guys are, like I said, you're weird. You're way, way out there. All right, let's get to the big news. The two big stories of this weekend, you know them as well as I do. There's no use in pussyfooting around. Reese Witherspoon and that guy on TV that said F and S and the G word and the F and everything. In South Carolina, some poor guy, his first time at bat, his first time on the air, I say poor guy, and somebody made the comment to me this weekend that I thought was very, very prescient. I thought it was, which I don't know what that word means, but I thought it was an extremely, I thought it was extremely perceptive. They said the following thing. They said, you know what, I wish we had more news anchors like that. I wish we had more unpolished and off-the-cuff and honest, stumbling kind of news anchors. And I realize that that probably doesn't sound right coming from a guy who's always championed professionalism, right? But here's where I believe that person may have the point. That guy didn't do it on purpose. He did it by mistake. It was an accident. He apologized. It was a terrible thing to say, and he evidenced a great deal of there's multi levels of ignorance there in terms of, well, what's the audience, you know, where am I? Why am I not speaking much more professionally? What caused me to get this angry that I spit this stuff out? Why am I this tense? There's a lot of things happening there. So I'm not necessarily saying, oh, well, that's forgivable. But I am saying anybody that does television news, particularly people that are doing live TV, really need to get, I think they need to loosen up, and they have to begin to talk more directly to the audience, and they have to allow for the odd mistake. I think if you look at the greatest news coverage, well, when we think of the greatest news anchor moment, what would you say it is?
What does that mean, the best news anchor moment?
Like the best news anchor moment.
Well, the best news anchor moment for me, in terms of honesty, was not really a news anchor moment. It's difficult to say this.
Well, did it involve a news anchor?
Yes, it did, but it involved, it was honest, it was real, it was compelling, but you never saw her.
Oh, you talk about when they had a camera in the colon.
Yes, I'm talking about Katie Couric's colon. That was compelling television, and I thought, and I give her credit for that. That was, we were looking at Katie's, I mean, we were up, and I would appreciate if no one starts to snicker, which is what he's doing right now.
Cut it out, bud. Are you telling me, I'm not, Margaret.
Phil, resist the temptation of getting up. You want a compelling moment, that's a compelling moment.
When that camera was going up Katie Couric's rear end, huh?
Boy, you really get your kicks. You need to get your kicks out of every single thing, don't you? The idea of something going...
No, I'm not trying to get my kicks, okay?
What was that?
I'm not trying to get my kicks. Bud?
I don't know.
Robert?
I don't know.
For me...
Jesus. Well, we don't even know what it is you're talking about.
For me, it was Walter Cronkite breaking down when he got the news that Kennedy was dead. Now, I don't even remember it because I was a little kid and, you know, I was just staring at a TV wondering what the hell I was looking at. But in later years, when I saw that moment, I thought that was just a real moment. That was just real. It wasn't. He wasn't a guy thinking, wow, other news anchors have cried on the air. And if I cry now, it could be my Emmy moment. He wasn't thinking that because there had been no other guys that cried on the air before him. There'd been no reason to cry on the air. Television had just come into its own in the early 50s. The World War II was over, so that event, you know. So it was simply, it was really Walter Cronkite genuinely crying because this man that he had met just months before, he'd given an interview to Cronkite, Kennedy had, and now he's crying, and now he's feeling pain, and he's also trying to hold it back. He's looking at the clock, he's looking at his watch, he's trying to be professional. To me, that was a great moment. And nowadays, we have people that are trying to calculate those moments. They're trying to, sorry, you know.
Well, who, for instance?
I don't know, man. It just seems to me like I always see people who, and I want to be very honest with you right now, you know, like, God bless him, Glenn Beck, my former colleague, great guy. He is. He's a very nice man. He's a father, he's a husband, and he's a nice guy. Glenn's a theatrical guy. And I never, you know, because I happen to know, you know, that Glenn, well, learned at my feet.
No, he didn't. Come in and see your show one time.
Yeah, I wouldn't be giving yourself that many culottes, Phil.
Culottes?
Yes, culottes, as in...
You mean kudo.
What?
Kudos.
What's a kudo? Oh.
Yeah, a culotte?
Take it easy, sport. Just don't be patting yourself on the back or scratching yourself up your you-know-what, because I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Point that I'm trying to make is that when Glenn this weekend said that he's giving the government until Monday to come clean about the Boston, otherwise he's going to spill what he knows, it turns out the cat that he was talking about, that Saudi, got nothing to do with the bombing. And the way he was talking... You know, it was like this real heartfelt, earnest thing. It was bullcrap. I mean, I didn't think he was feeling all that much emotion. That's what it is. It's all very calculated. It's like the reality show. Today, we can't even be real with how we feel. Today, even the reality show is scripted, or at least it's rehearsed. So when we get back to this guy from South Carolina, or what the hell was it?
Yeah, it's like it was.
Well, it was Dakota.
Yeah, it was North. It was North Carolina. Forget.
It was North Dakota.
Yes.
That's not in the South.
What's in the South?
North Carolina. All right, so we'll be back. His name is Clementine. And all right, so there was that story, and then there was Reese Witherspoon, as she gave a load of you know what to a Georgia State Patrol or a Georgia police officer, as her husband was being pulled from the car, forced to walk a straight line, grabbed by the back of the head, shoved into the trunk, and locked in there. And they said, "Y'all going downtown?" No, they didn't. We'll be right back. I'll tell you what happened. World famous Phil Hendry Show. I have experience with Georgia police. They're pretty good guys.
Truth. Also, is Secret our Service bitch. Down there. The Phil Hendry Show.
They are, guys, sort of. Atlanta PD is okay.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And we want to mention this particular hour we're dedicating as this segment of our show to Kristen Barris Bryant. And Kristen is one of our listeners. And she, Kristen suffered through the early stages and the surgery and recovery from breast cancer. And I talked to her this weekend on Facebook. And she's getting better, and we're happy to hear that, Kristen. And I posted this for her today. This is Tommy Seeback's version of Apache. And it may sound okay to you because you can't really see Tommy and his band, but imagine Howdy Doody with a mullet.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
What are you talking about, a mullet?
I said, imagine Howdy Doody with a mullet.
Well, I don't want to imagine. God in heaven.
Right. And so anyway, it's scary. And I posted that, and it's one of the worst things you've ever seen.
So why would you this poor woman has recovered from breast cancer.
She's a great lady, and I also talked to her mom. And I said to the folks on Facebook, as I do to my listeners tonight, if you get a chance to say hello to her, please do. She's just a nice woman, and we never do anything with this. I never say anything to my listeners, and I don't say anything to you guys when I hear from people who say, and I hear it all the time. You know, Phil, I listened to your show, or we went to the website and we listened to some of the archives, we listened to some of the bits, and it helped me through this, and it helped me through that, and I was depressed, and I thought I was going to blow my head off. And
are you kidding me, man?
No, I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you.
Well, you're exaggerating. I'm sure.
I'm not exaggerating, no. I've heard from people who say things to me like, the first time my wife laughed as she was coming out of her coma, which, by the way, Don and Mike put her in. I'm kidding. I'm just joking around, Don. You know I am. When she was coming out of her coma, and you were the first thing she laughed at was you, Phil, and it wasn't your radio show. It was a picture of you. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, so that's what she was laughing at.
Yeah.
No, it was the show.
But you're joking.
Yes, I'm joking. What is it with everybody tonight? Anyway, so here was a lady who had I talked to her this weekend, and she and by the way, Kristen, I know someone. I'm very grateful to have met and made the acquaintance of and know someone who had breast cancer, had a double mastectomy, and had reconstructive surgery. And it was great, and they did a great job, and she is, this woman is today fully recovered and very, very happy. So that's something you can opt for if you want. They've got phenomenal reconstructive of surgeons, reconstructive plastic surgeons who do that kind of work. Then there was, I don't want to get a hold into a breast cancer thing here, but I mean, you know, like I said to, I've said this before, if there's a woman in your life that you love or you care about, I don't care if she's a daughter or a wife or, you know, it's something you probably ought to get a little bit educated on. There's a lot of women who, if they have it in their, well, I don't want to get into it, but I mean, the fact is a lot of women, if they have it in their family, they just go ahead and they opt to have a mastectomy.
Well, a double mastectomy, because you don't want to come down with the cancer. If you can, now there's no, if you come down with it,
You don't come down with cancer.
If you get it, I mean, yes, you can have the reconstructive. I wouldn't have the tattoo.
Well, the one that I saw was there was a lady had a double mastectomy and she had a tattoo. You know, that's, you know, valid. That's cool. Whatever you do, you know, remember that there are options, and some of them are options that if you want to regain your form, you want to regain your figure to some degree, that can be done by way of reconstructive surgery.
Just belched again.
If I belch, I will make note of it. You don't have to, bud.
Yeah, what are you doing, man? You keeping track?
No, what are you, writing a book?
No, you're writing a book, man.
Hold on, bud. So that's the cool thing about that. And anyway, Kristen, we're gonna dedicate a portion of the show every night to you until you're real, you know, till you're healed.
And you're not getting paid for this, and there's no commercial endorsement. There's just
no nothing. It's just something I want to do. Is that okay with you?
Don't get defensive, Phil. You know, I would like to know a little bit more about this. You're not sucking up to the audience. You're not doing anything. Would you turn that down, bud?
Look at this guy. Looks like a
howdy doody with a mullet. All right.
Would you turn that down, please? What is that?
That's him thinking that that's how Indians talk.
What are you talking about?
That's what he thinks an Indian sounds like.
Who?
This guy, Tommy Seebeck.
What do you mean that's what he thinks?
The guy comes from Denmark. I think that's what Danish people think Indians sound like.
Well, he looks like an ass.
Yes, he does. All right, get out of here with that. It sucks. All right, world famous Phil Hendry show. So that's story number one, which was what did I say? Well, it had something to do with something. Anyway, story number two. Oh yeah, we're just talking about the lady with breast cancer. That's not story number one. Is Reese Witherspoon and her husband? They were pulled over by Georgia police officers. I believe it was Saturday night, something. Oh, Friday night, and she was arrested along with her husband. Her husband is an agent, a Hollywood, agent, works for Creative Artists Agency, CAA. His name is Jim Toth. They were in Atlanta, and he was pulled over because they thought that the car was driving around, couldn't stay in its lane, I think is what the police officer wrote out in his report. And so they brought him out of the car, and they questioned him. And Reese Witherspoon, his wife, is in the passenger seat, and she's yakking and saying, "What are you doing?" and this and that and this and that. And the cop says to her, "Sit your butt back in there." And then he places her husband under arrest, and that's when she gets out of the car and says, "I'm an American citizen, standing on American ground," is the way she put it. They were both hammered, you know. And so he told her, "If you keep on interfering with me, I'm going to place you under arrest for, you know, interfering with a police officer or whatever the hell the charge is." And she wouldn't do that. And I'm always fascinated by people that ignore cops, you know.
Well, why is that?
Because you're not going to get anything out of it. You're going to get arrested, you know.
But you're making a point, Phil. See, I don't understand you. A lot of people don't understand you. What do? You just bend over for cops?
Yeah, what are you doing, bending over?
What do you mean bending over? Because I get a ticket? If I don't sign the ticket, I'm going to go to jail.
Well, but don't you fight it?
If I fight it, I'll fight it in court. What do you mean, right there where the cop's giving me the ticket?
If I'm being treated unjustly, I've got to say something.
Oh, please. What the hell do you think? If the cop was really being out of line, okay? If I thought the cop was being out of line, there ain't nothing I can do about that either. If he's beating hell out of me just because he's a criminal, then that's what's going to happen to me. And I'm going to have to fight that fight someplace else because I ain't going to win, man. You are not going to win. You get your ass kicked by a cop. He may be good, bad, or indifferent. You're going to wind up going into jail or going into a hospital ward someplace. You're going to come out. You're still going to feel, you know, like you want to do something about it. But the time you get out of jail and get away from the cop is the time to do it. Not while you're standing there at the side of a highway fighting your so-called good fight. People crack me up. I'm telling you.
What are you saying, man? I shouldn't say nothing?
First of all, 99% of the things that people are complaining about that happen to them when it comes to cops, they're creating in their own minds because they've got a problem with cops. because they've never been able to get along with them, because they're just the kind of people who want to do what they want to do, and cops shouldn't stand in their way. So you got to figure out, number one, whether you're in the right or not. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
We'll be in the right when we come back.
That's right. I mean, that's wrong. No, that's right.
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right. Getting back here to the Reese Witherspoon. By the way, congratulations to Manchester United for winning the Barclays Premier League, the English Premier League, which is the major league of soccer in Great Britain. Manchester United is a badass team because they won that thing by I don't know how many points, like 15, 16, 17 points. And in English soccer, they play it just straight ahead, man. No fuss, no muss. They don't have any of this playoffs. It's 20 teams, and the first team, and the team that finishes first wins the championship.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah, do I want to have a playoff?
Why do they need a playoff? The team finished first. They win, you know.
Yeah, but you all give a chance.
They had a chance.
So that's how you'd like to see it done in America?
If it was up to me, yeah, it would be. If it was up to me, we'd cut the playoffs way off. Way back, man.
Man, you must not like money, man. That's the only way they're going to make money.
Let me explain something to you, because maybe you guys don't know this. I said it the other time when we were talking about this. The most valuable sports franchise on Earth, on the planet Earth, that we live on now. Someday we may travel beyond this planet.
You're saying Earth as we know it?
Yes, Earth as we know it.
In a present time, with the present tectonic plates and everything.
Yeah, with the pleasant... Get out of here with the tectonic plates.
Not pleasant, present.
Yes. Right now, okay, the number one most valuable sports franchise in the world is Manchester United. It's worth $4.5 billion. Are you ready for that? $4.5 billion. That beats the crap right out of the Yankees. Forget it. The Yankees are not even worth... The Yankees aren't worth half... Well, yeah, the Yankees are worth a little more than half that. New York Yankees, a little more. That's it. That's the most valuable franchise, so you're telling me they don't care about money over there? Those cats know how to make money over there with sports like we never even figured out yet. We got playoffs, we got semifinal, quadruple final, quadriplegic finals.
The quadriplegic final.
Shut up, man.
Get out of here, bud.
That's the final they're going to have with a guy that can't walk.
That's very funny, bud.
Yeah, that's not really funny, man. They got it all, you know. We have everything, and if, you know, the hockey and basketball and baseball, and we can't get enough teams into the playoffs till, frankly, it doesn't mean anything half the time. But over there, they got 20 teams in their top league. 20. They play 38 games. That's two games against each team in the league. So if there's 20 teams, you're playing 19 other teams twice. What's that come to, bud?
Okay, two.
Yeah, I know how to do it.
What?
Yeah, it's 2 times 20.
No, you jackass.
Hold on. Okay, Margaret, what is it?
How many teams are you... You said there's 20 teams in the league.
Yeah, there's 20 teams in the league.
He's right, 40.
No, wrong.
Yeah, there is.
No! If there's 20 teams in the league, you're one of the teams, right?
I'm one of the teams? What are you talking about?
Just take it from me, okay? It's 19 games that you... It's 19 teams.
Yeah, see, I said right now, you said it's 19 games.
There's 19 other teams.
Oh, you don't count yourself.
No, I don't think you would. You don't play yourself twice.
Phil, don't be so sarcastic. It's really not very attractive.
Oh, well, I'm so brokenhearted.
You see, I think a lot of women will probably tell you that now that you're out on the market, as it were.
No, I am not. What are you talking about?
Well, I've seen some of the posts. You've been, oh, love, exciting and new. Love gets a hold of you. The love boat. Soon Phil will be booking a first-class cabin.
Thank you. In any event, there's 19 teams besides your own team. 2 times 19 is 38. That's 38 games in the league. 38 games over, like, once a week. So it's about a 38-week season. So it's a long season. It's a long season. It stretches from August to May. And they're not only playing those games, they're also playing games in the Champions League. All kinds of stuff going on. So it's amazing. I think it's fun. It's fun to follow. I like it. And just to go to the point of, you know, well, is that it? That's the end of it? Yes, that's it. They've won the Championship of English Football, the Manchester United. There's also the FA Cup. The FA Cup is like the U.S. Open. Any team can play. I think not any team, but the top, I don't know, 90 teams or something in English competition. So you have this Premier League is 20. Well, you've got all these other divisions.
Yeah, that's the whole thing that's kind of stupid about it. Got a team that's in a village.
Are you telling me the village team can make it all the way to the big game?
Yes, a village team, because in England, soccer's soccer. And so they take the first, I don't know what the hell, they take the first 9 divisions that they have, going all the way down to some little village team.
You talk about a village team, man. You're going to get a guy, a village smithy or something? Not a smithy.
Bet they could have it.
The what?
They're going to have a team. In other words, if they have a village smithy...
The village smithy. You mean they're going to have the guy that works in the blacksmith shop?
Well, that's what you're talking about. That's ridiculous. You're not going to have a team full of smithies and stagecoach.
Well, in English football, that's what they do. They have a team full of smithies and barkeeps and guys that drive stagecoaches against some cat that's making £3 million a year.
Which, how much is that?
Like $2?
No, it ain't $2. Are you crazy? Pound's worth more than a dollar. In any event, that's what it is. And they go for the FA Cup. All right, so that's one. There's the Premier League. That's another one. Then they have the Champions League, which is all of Europe. I think it's very exciting. So the whole point that I was trying to make is congratulations to Manchester United. On to the next topic. Thank you very much. God.
Well, you brought it up, Phil.
Yeah, I'm talking about Billy Smithy.
I wasn't talking about it. You guys are talking about the village soccer team. Although they have village, technically you're right, they could have a village soccer team. I don't know, man. I don't know how it works. All right, now Reese Witherspoon, as I was saying, was arrested along with her husband on Friday night by Georgia police when she got out of the car and said, my name is Reese Witherspoon, and you're not. And the cop said, ha, 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 get a load of the lisp on that broad. And she went, you'll see what you're dealing with. And the next thing you know, the cop slaps the cuffs on her and says, listen, sister, I got all I can handle with this juice hound here. Is that your husband? Yes, it is, she said. And he said, all right, I'm sticking you in the back of this radio car here. I'm taking him so he can throw up in this ditch, and then I'm putting him in the back seat with you. Then we're going on down to that substation down there. Do you have any objections? And she said, yes, sir. So the point is she was being a drunk.
Well, that was it. And then she apologized, I think, later on.
Yes, she did apologize later on, and Doug Danger is going to join us, by the way. We'll get a little bit more on this, but she did apologize. As a matter of fact, she has canceled her, I guess she canceled Jimmy Fallon and a few other appearances on some talk shows because it was just not going to be, I don't blame her. It was just not going to be anything she's going to want to talk about, you know. Doug Danger with us from the Orange County Courier. Doug, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right, and you're right. Reese Witherspoon has canceled appearances on a Jimmy Fallon show. She was set to make an appearance on a Late Night with Jimmy Fallon and Good Morning America. And according to the Washington Post, she has canceled both events. Now, the news source that I have reports that the star of the forthcoming movie, Mud, that's the name of the new movie she's got coming out called Mud, she planned to promote the new movie on Monday on a taping at GMA, Good Morning America, that would have aired on Wednesday. And the Late Night appearance was scheduled for tomorrow. But she failed to appear at the Mud press junket on Monday. And as you know, on Friday, she was arrested along with her husband, Jim Toff. Jim Toff, as you said, Phil, is an agent. He works for CAA. I don't know if he represents her or not.
That would make sense, though, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. It might be a conflict of interest. She might have met him at the agency. She might have been handled by CAA, and they met, and they had cocktails, and one thing led to another. And they wound up being intimate and involved that way and probably said to her at that time, well, now there's no way I can represent you because it would be seen as a conflict of interest. And whether it was at her house or his house, he's got to get out of there, get down a fire escape or somehow go out the front door while the sun's not out and get to his car, dive in, stay low, And
where are you saying all this?
What are you talking about, Doug?
What am I talking? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? You understand that?
Yeah. What are you talking about? He's got to get into the car.
I'm telling you that this guy does not want to be perceived as someone who's sniffing around. You know, we used to have a saying. I grew up in the South, Phil. We had a saying. You got your nose in the hen house. Pretty soon, you're going to have your nose in the kitchen. And what that means is, if you're sniffing around, you know, if you're sniffing around the barnyard, won't be long before you're sniffing around a supermarket. You got your nose in the barn, you got your nose in the barn door. You understand what I'm saying?
So, no, I don't understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying...
Well, if you don't understand what I'm saying, don't say I don't understand what you're saying, then say I think what you're saying.
Can I say something?
God, what happened to you?
Yeah, what was that, Margaret?
What?
Well, you went, butcher, like that.
I'm trying to get a word in edgewise. I understand what you mean by conflict of interest. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. If Jim Toth, you know, met Reese Witherspoon over cocktails one night at a restaurant, one thing leads to another, and they are at her home or his home, and it's loud, maybe louder than it's ever been, and a neighbor gets wind of that, or someone delivering an early morning paper, or a milkman. And let me tell you something. I've known more than one gossip writer in this town. Not gossip, but they used to call it gossip. I've known more than one entertainment writer in this town. You interview a milkman. Milkman knows everything because he's coming up the back door with those bottles. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And I find out that a milkman hears more things coming to the back door. So what I'm saying is this. If Toth takes her home and he gets a regular milk delivery at 5 o'clock or yogurt or whatever he has delivered there,
well, I can tell you that as a mother, it's important to have fresh milk, but if he's a single man and he's having regular milk deliveries...
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Why is that weird?
Yeah, why is that weird?
Well, it's just, that doesn't make no sense, that's all.
Yeah, see, that's suspicious.
All right, if his single man is having regular milk deliveries, what does that mean?
Well, are you saying gay?
I'm saying it could be, yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
Why does that mean gay?
Because of health. Because he's obviously interested in his health. And in Hollywood, that only means one thing, gay. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist doing a report 2 years ago on Billy Bremen, and you probably don't remember him. He was a coming star in television. He was straight. He drank milk. But as it turns out, he was covering for a gay friend of his that had committed a homicide. I don't know.
What does that mean? Everything you just said doesn't mean anything.
I'm saying that one of his friends was gay and killed somebody, and he wanted people to think it was him, so he started having milk delivered to the house. God, man.
You know something, Doug? I don't know what you're talking about half the time.
Well, there's a newsflash. Why do you keep having me on the show?
Because you're the guy that tells me you got all this information. What do you mean the guy started having milk regularly delivered to his house so the cops would think he was gay and it would take the heat off of his friend? And look at this. Now I have to break. Finish your report.
What? Never mind.
God, I can't stand that guy.
Phil, you are the one that caused that.
Yeah, you didn't let him say what he got to say.
Oh, come on. The guy's getting off point. I had a friend, Billy Blevin. He was gay. No, he was straight. And he had a milk delivery. And what's that got to do with Reese Witherspoon and this guy, Toth? We'll be right back with our next big story. The guy that cussed up a storm on the set and got fired in South Dakota or North Dakota or South something. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
The Phil Hendry Show. Look, guys, listen to me on the set of a South Carolina team. I'm from South Carolina, and I'm gay.
Well, I was hoping we could cue up some audio on this next story. This is the A.J. Clement story, but I haven't been able to find one that is unedited. And it sounds like it was off air. A.J. Clement was and I say was, very specifically because he was. I guess he got fired today. That's the word that I'm hearing. A.J. Clement on Sunday debuted as the new weekend sports anchor for NBC affiliate KFYR in Bismarck, North Dakota. Less than 24 hours later, he's looking for work again, having been fired by the station for opening his first ever broadcast with profanity. Clement's co-anchor, Van Tu, was introducing her colleague at the start of the Sunday Evening Report when he let slip a couple of curse words. In video of the incident, which went viral afterward and got Keep AJ trending on Twitter, he appears unaware that he's on camera at the time. And that's what it looks like, folks, because for those of you watching Phil TV, you can see there's the station slide, North Dakota News. So that's the slide that they had up. And it was still up when someone had the mic on. Now, keep in mind that the news anchor doesn't control his microphone. The anchor controls only what he says, and that's, you know, true. And a live mic is always possible. And if you've got somebody in the control room that is anticipating, okay, we're going on the air, go ahead and boop, pot up everybody's mic or go live, make all the mics hot, then they're hot. So it's something you got to keep in mind, you know, is the mic on? I remember a really good friend of mine, Carell, who I'm having lunch with this weekend.
Well, name dropping.
What? He's not name dropping. Are you having brunch with him?
Yeah.
And I'm not invited. Why?
Because I'm having brunch with him. What do I got to invite you to all of this stuff, Margaret? Why don't you call him up?
Because you said you'd... Never mind.
You're having brunch with Carell?
What's the big deal? Yes, I am. So I'm having brunch with Carell. I'll ask him all about it, okay? Now, I didn't approve of him taking all that heat because Carell, the mic was open in his studio as he was saying some choice things, which anchors, which talk show hosts are going to do when they're in a commercial break. The mic was open, and that wasn't his fault. The mic should have been off. The engineer who was running his show at the time should have closed the mic, and he didn't. That's happened to me a few times. When you're doing a talk show and you close your mic in the studio, it doesn't necessarily mean that your mic is dead. And you're talking with your colleagues, you're talking to yourself, you're talking to whoever, and a lot of times you're going to say all kinds of stuff. It's part of the process of doing a radio show. You may let out with an expletive. That's how, you know, the ball game is played for as long as I've been around in this business, and I've seen the best that you could possibly imagine, and they all use profanity when the mic is closed. I've seen all of the greats, and they use four-letter words, MF, F. You would be shocked. Your favorite people, believe me. All the biggies and all the ones that you think are just so wonderful, all of them with the MF and the F and the S and the, you know, FU and everything, okay? So that's where it's at. And it's up to an engineer who's in control ultimately of that audio to make sure those mics are off. So in his case, in Carell's case, he got screwed by some jackass that was asleep at the wheel. Now in this guy's case, they're about ready to go to the air. He knows it. Because they're getting a countdown on the set, and they're probably down to one, and boom. And what is this guy saying as the mic goes live? He's saying effing S. So, to pick up the story...
Why don't you... You can't play it.
I can't play it because the tape that I have is not beeped. Clements co-anchor Van Tu was introducing her colleague at the start of the Sunday Evening Report when he let slip a couple of curse words in the video, which went viral afterward and got Keep AJ trending on Twitter. He appears unaware that he's on camera at the time. The station later posted an apology online, and Van Tu expressed regrets during the 10 p.m. broadcast, but the damage to Clement's career had already been done. That couldn't have gone any worse, he tweeted after the gaffe. Tough day. Thanks for the support. We all make mistakes. I'm truly sorry for mine. I'll try my hardest to come back better and learn from this. He will. He's been fired from KFYR, but I bet you money this kid gets another chance. I mean, of all the people on the air in America today, there's one guy who is the least likely of all to use any profanity, any obscenity, you name it, and that's AJ Clement. You better believe it. According to CBS News, the station said on Sunday night that Clement had been suspended. On Monday morning, the rookie anchor posted some bad news. Unfortunately, KFYR TV's decided to let me go. Thank you to them and everyone in North Dakota for the opportunity and everyone for the support. A few minutes later, he added, rookie mistake, I'm a free agent. Can't help but laugh at myself and stay positive. Wish I didn't trip over my freaking shoes out of the gate. There's a guy with a good attitude. I don't know, you know.
Well, didn't you say that you froze up the first time the microphone was open?
Yes, that happened to me. And maybe that would have been better if it happened to him. But I did. The first time, my very first day on the air, when the mic went open, I froze. And another time, I just froze.
What'd you do?
I just punched a commercial. I didn't know what to say. I was like, and I punched the commercial. Another time, my job was to call a contest winner and get the contest winner's reaction and tape it. So the only time that you could do this was during a record. So what you do a lot of times, this happened, you know, all the time back in the day when I was, you know, spinning records. You put a record on and you call up the contest winner, Mr. Joe Blow in, you know, Happydale.
Where's that?
I'm making it up, okay?
Happydale doesn't exist.
So I would call up Joe Blow in Happydale, which doesn't exist, and I would say to him, "Hi, Mr. You know, Blow, it's Phil Hendry, and I'm with WX, you know, something station. And don't ask me where that is, bud, because it's fake."
I know, that's fake.
Good, great. And I'd say, "Sir, you won, and I swear to God," well, wait till you hear this story. I'm going to tell you this story out of the top of the hour news. You're not going to believe what the guy won, and you're not going to believe what his reaction was. What he won was amazing. What his reaction was even more amazing. And we'll get to that and other news here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about A.J. Clement and the MF and all that, Reese Witherspoon, a bunch of other stuff. Coming up, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Did we have, we had Doug Danger and he hung up on us, right?
Yes.
You know, I got to tell you something, Doug, if you're listening, I don't know how much more of that stuff I'm going to be able to take from you or anybody. I got people hanging up on me. Every time I bring somebody on this show, you guys ought to be grateful. Grateful. Nobody's ever heard of the Orange County Courier. They've heard of the Orange County Register, which, by the way, rest in peace, Gary Lycan. He had there was a memorial for Gary on Saturday, the radio writer for the Orange County Register. As a matter of fact, I got to say that Gary was the radio writer basically for Los Angeles radio. And forgive me, folks, for being a little local here or within the family, if you will. But for years and years and years and years and years, Gary Lycan has been was the only radio writer in Los Angeles writing about, you know, radio, such as, you know, to the extent that anybody writes about radio. He was the man in Los Angeles. It was not as comprehensive as some cities. He wasn't Ben Fong Torres in San Francisco, who, you know, Ben Fong Torres reviewed and critiqued radio. Gary was more or less the bulletin board, if you will, for the radio business in Los Angeles. He kept abreast of who was working where, who was getting a job, who was not getting a job, where you know, what stations were having success, which ones weren't. And to that end, we owe him a great debt, and Gary passed on recently, and his memorial was on Saturday, so I really appreciate that from Gary, and we'll remember him for that. Because you know what? I mean, I remember when I first got to town, he didn't have the greatest things to say about me.
Yeah, he said a lot of bad stuff. He said, "You're going to get kicked off."
No, he didn't say I was going to get kicked off. He just said I wasn't going to last. And you know what? And I remember I was upset about that. But as time went by, I stopped being such a baby about things. You know, I've tried to stop being such a cantankerous ego case about stuff, and to see where people are just doing their job, you know. And so I want to acknowledge Gary on the air and thank him and say that I'm sorry that he's no longer with us, and thank you, Gary, for filling the shoes that you did and filling the role that you did in this city, because we, you know, this town, Los Angeles, in terms of radio, folks, you know, I don't know where most of you guys live these days, or you know where you're listening to me from, but LA radio, you know, it was bad when I got here back in '96, and with the exception of my show being on the air, naturally, it hasn't improved.
Yay!
2, 3, and cut. All right, welcome back to our program, 877-87-TICK-PHIL. And we're also online at philhenryshow.com.
Wait, what did you just say?
Never mind.
Well, no one can understand what you're saying. It has gone to my attention.
Excuse me, what are you doing?
I'm going to read the story here on Chaz Bono, 60 pounds. He went from being, look at that, look at what he was and look at what he is.
That's fine. Would you like to give me a chance to introduce you?
Well, hurry it up, will you?
Ladies and gentlemen, now here's Margaret Gray to talk about Chaz Bono.
Yes, and?
Here's Margaret Gray to talk about Chaz Bono, who's gone from 60, who's...
I'll do it. Hold on.
Well, Margaret, I didn't...
Just let me do it. Hello, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray for the Weekend Entertainment Report, even though it's Monday. Chaz, what?
Is that the name of it?
It was the Weekend Entertainment Report, but it's on a Monday, and that's an asinine name for it.
Well, who told you to call it that, Margaret?
I did.
Well, then why are you calling it that?
What?
She was calling it that. She wants to call it that.
Yeah, you want to call it that, but even though it's a Monday.
Because I didn't know it was going to be on a Monday.
Well, when did you think it was going to be?
On a Friday. Friday, yay. That way it makes sense. If I say, here is the Weekend Entertainment Report. Hi, everyone, it's Wednesday. They're going to think there's something very, very seriously wrong with me. Not that they don't already. So then I said to David, and I said to you, can we do it on Friday?
And I said yes.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry, it's the Gouldens. So then I said, could it be on a Friday? And you said yes, and David said no. So I went with David.
Why?
Because, I don't know.
Yeah, looks like you blew that.
I didn't blow. Blew who?
No, I said, looks like you blew the fact that you took his advice to put it on a Monday. Now it's a Monday, and now you call it the Margaret Gray Weekend Report, even though it's a Monday.
Yes, because it's a stupid time to do a weekend report.
Well, Phil Stan, why don't you just...
No one's talking to you, bud. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Margaret Gray, and welcome to our weekend report, even though it's a Monday. All right?
Fine.
Chaz Bono. Hold on. Chaz Bono. Chaz Bono. All right, let me do that again. Start with some music, Phil. Just bum, 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 bum. What? Would you please start with a little music? Go bum, 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 bum.
Dum bum 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 bum.
Good evening and welcome to Margaret Gray's Entertainment Report, even though it's a Monday. Chaz Bono, if you've seen him once, you've probably seen him one too many times, because a little bit of him goes a long way. I'm talking about the former daughter of Sonny and Cher, who became the former son of Sonny because Sonny's not here, even though technically he still is his son. But Sonny, every day my life was full of gray. Sonny, you came and swept the clouds away. Well, Sonny Bono may not be here, but his son Chaz Bono is Sonny to the long-gone Sonny. No, 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 that's wrong.
What are we rehearsing here, or are we doing the report, Margaret?
Well, I guess we're doing the report. You know, you act very unprofessional.
But we're all going to be on the phone in a minute, and then everybody...
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait. Hold on for a minute. We're on the air right now.
I know that.
You can't stop in the middle of a report and go, no, 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 that's not right. What are you trying to do?
What I'm trying to do is give the entertainment report, even though it's a Monday.
And that's going to be the name of it, huh?
Yes, that's going to be the name of it.
And you were ad-libbing?
No, I was not. I wrote it.
Well, she wrote it out, Miss Sunny. I heard of Sunny, every day my life is cold and gray. Sunny, you know the song Sunny?
Yes, I know the song Sunny.
That's what I was working in. And so I did it. And then I thought, that sucks, and I wanted to start again.
We're on the air. You can't start again. You got to keep going. That's the way it is. I'm awfully sorry to tell you.
Fine. Could you give me some...
Is there any music we can use?
Not yet, Dan. Approved, man. You got to go bum-bum-bum-bum.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Margaret Gray.
I'll do that part.
Bum 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 bum.
Cut. And now, Margaret Gray and the Weekend Report, even though it's a Monday. Hi, I'm Margaret Gray, forced into doing this report on a Monday, even though it is the Weekend Report. I'm embarrassed. I feel much smaller than I should, but I'll press on because I'm a professional. Dateline wherever, Hollywood. Chaz Bono, the former daughter of Sonny and Cher, the rotund Chastity Bono, has lost 60 pounds. Sonny, who was the Sonny of Sonny, is now just Sonny Chaz by himself, if you will. Sonny, ooh. Yesterday my life was cold and gray. Sonny Bono, better known as Chaz Bono, he's still Sonny to the long-gone Sonny, lost 60 pounds. And how did he do that? Well, we know that Phil Henry lost 80 pounds and wasn't running around the countryside gloating as if he's the greatest thing since King Arthur. Phil Henry lost 80 pounds, kept his mouth shut for the most part, even though he did crow to his audience. But then again, how many people are those? And Phil is now a very svelte 215, 220, thereabouts pounds. I don't know how much Chaz Bono weighs, but he looks like a big fat tub to me. Back to you, Phil.
Well, that's going to win you friends with the Bonos, huh?
Well, you know something, Phil? Chaz knows that I love him. I'm in a little bit of a bad mood. I've got to suck up to you, otherwise you're going to get upset.
You got to suck up to me? What are you talking about?
I got to because you're going...
Well, you didn't have to call him a slob.
Well, he is a slob. And I love you very much, Chaz, and you know that I do. And I told your father that. And I told your mother that. And I'm telling you that. But you're a slob. Now, 60 pounds may sound good to you, and I mean this, but the man I'm sitting next to right now, the man immediately to my left, Phil Henry, weighed over 280. You were what, Phil? 289, right?
289, yeah.
So he lost 80 pounds all about thereabouts. And for you to say you're some kind of a big wind at 60 pounds, let me tell you something, Chubby. You got a long way to go. And I say that loving Chaz Bono, and you don't know how much it hurts me to have to give you kudos, Phil, but I will.
Well, at least you're giving me kudos and not culottes.
I hope you die from cancer.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Well, she's the one that said it.
Yeah, I did. So what?
So you're the one that said it. Culottes to Phil Henry, ladies and gentlemen. All right, folks, don't forget our website is philhenryshow.com for a backstage pass. Just go to philhenryshow.com and pick up that backstage pass as if you've always meant to, as if it's always been just a part, the organic part of you. The backstage pass, available at philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back. Ben Affleck is going to live on $1.50 a day, $1.50 a day. Father James McCorder is on to talk about poverty and how celebrities can highlight the plight of the poor here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Famous Phil Henry Show, and joining us from Glendale, California, we're going to have Father James McCorders to talk about poverty, the plight of the impoverished. There are a lot of people that are going to be influenced by what celebrities think and do. And Ben Affleck is going to be living on $1.50 a day to highlight poverty. Father McCorders, how are you?
Very good, Phil. Thank you for having us on to talk about such an important thing.
And where are you tonight?
Tonight we're at our parent-teacher, which is for our preschool, not a preschool, and as well as our early elementary school students. And we're talking with them about the spiritual counseling that we're making available for our third and fourth and fifth graders. And you can hear that quite a few of the young people and the younger people are now in our kindergarten and our preschool are also here with the parents.
And have you got some time to talk with us?
I've got just a little bit of time, Phil. I've finished with counseling with quite a few parents. I'm quite tired this evening. I'm wanting to go and get something to eat, but I've always got time for you.
Ben Affleck is a celebrity who wants to live on $1.50 a day to highlight poverty. He's set to give up his celebrity lifestyle for this paltry allowance. The Academy Award and Golden Globe Award winner will take part in the Live Below the Line. It's a challenge that will happen next week. It highlights poverty in a unique way by challenging everyday people to live on the equivalent of the extreme poverty line for 5 days.
That is exactly right, Phil. And it's a challenge that's being taken up by a young man like Affleck and some of these other young celebrities and young actors. And I think it shows a great strength of character and a great commitment to the human race and the future of the human race and the future of people that a young man such as this, so blessed with such talent and so blessed with so many resources, and the fact that he's made such a good living in the entertainment business, that he would sacrifice that and live below the poverty line and live the way some of these people live, I think it speaks volumes for him. I commend him.
Now, you and other educators, as well as other people who work outreach to the poor and other disadvantaged people, you're involved in what way?
Well, as a way that here in Los Angeles and in the Hollywood community, we're there as monitors and people that are going to oversee the project to ensure that the reality of the so-called reality of the poverty, the reality of the lifestyle, is maintained. In working with some of the actors that have been involved in this program before, and again, my blood sugar is a little bit low. Get Mrs. Duguid, yes. Some of the stew, please. I've got some stew coming to me, Phil.
I'm sorry to keep you from your dinner. You want to go?
No, it's all right. Mrs. Duguid is going to bring some stew in from the main house, please. Because I've been working so hard, I'm feeling the hunger right now. And I've been testing myself because I don't want to feel well-fed, and I don't want to judge another man when I have a full stomach and he doesn't, you see.
All right, so are you going to be like umpires or referees to make sure that the celebrities are living below the poverty line? Is that accurate to say?
That is accurate, yes.
And how would you do that?
Well, what we're doing is we will stop in to the residents, so that would be to the hostel or to the shelter that they're living at, and to talk with them for a few minutes, to look at some of the... Bill, and we'll talk with them for a few minutes.
Are you in a crowd there?
No, I'm all right. We'll talk with them for a few minutes, and we'll ensure that they're doing their very best to live below the poverty line to bring this message home to middle-class America. If they're not, if we find that they're living above the poverty line, that they can't take it, that maybe they're too weak for it, but certainly point it out to them. And it seems ironic that I'm talking about something like this. I'm waiting for Mrs. Duguid.
You're very hungry, huh?
I'm very hungry, but I also want to be hungry tomorrow when we start this. Because when I encounter Ben Affleck or I encounter some of the other actors, I want to make sure that I'm feeling the way I'm feeling right now. Because if I see them eating extra food and going over that poverty line and eating into a middle class or lower middle class line, they're not holding the line the way that the poor should eat, well, I'm not going to be happy. And I'm going to have the same mood that I have right now. Hold the phone for a moment, Phil.
All right.
Where's Duguid? Duguid! Duguid! Are we on the air?
Yes!
All right, forgive me. Would you tell Mrs. Duguid, please, to bring my stew to me now? I'll take my stew at the table. Yes, I'll be taking me stew. I'll be taking me stew here in the study. Mrs. Duguid, I'll be taking the stew. And I know there's children coming in and out. I don't want no children coming in and out. I'm sorry, Father Staley. Father Staley, have the children stay with their parents. I don't want any of these. And so I will tell them in no uncertain terms, you are to live below the poverty line, and you will continue to live below a poverty line, because this is how the poor live. Now, I haven't had a thing to eat all day.
You are suffering from low blood sugar, Father, and you're talking to us about poverty and about Ben Affleck living on $1.50 a day. What if Affleck begins to act the way you're acting? What if he is experiencing the same kind of mood swing?
Well, I would say then that he's got low blood sugar like I do, and it'll be real interesting to see whether he's able to suck it up, because that's what I've got to do.
Well, you're having some stew.
Yes, I'm having stew for the first time in 14 hours. I haven't had a thing to eat in 14 hours. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mrs. Duguid, thank you. Could I have a small piece of bread? 10 cents. No. 10 cents, you cheap. Forgive me.
All right, so tomorrow it begins. Ben Affleck will be living on $1.50 a day. You'll be monitoring.
That's exactly correct. Myself give me a piece of bread, will you? I'm trying to get just a... Hold on, Phil.
So tomorrow...
Oh, hold on. Hey, Dugan, Dugan. A piece of bread. 10 cents. What do you mean 10 cents? What is that? What are you charging for bread? What are you... Phil, I've got a little bit of a situation. And nonetheless, tomorrow we will make sure that these celebrities... You see, I'm going to be living on the $1.50 a day myself tomorrow just to see how I feel. I don't think I'm feeling too good, and I know he won't be feeling... I don't think it's going to be a very good day at all. But the reason why I bring all of this up... What's that? Yes. I asked her for a piece of bread.
Okay, okay. Father McQuarters, we have to take a break soon. Can you stay with me here?
Yes, I'm staying. Hold on. I asked her for a piece of bread.
Well, who are you talking to?
I'm talking to Father Staley. I asked her for a piece of bread, and she says to me, 10 cents. Since when? Since when?
If you're going to be...
Hold on, Phil. Since when is she charging a dime? No, 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 no. What, Phil?
If you're going to be living at the $1.50 a day poverty line along with Ben Affleck tomorrow, then maybe you don't need to eat that bread.
Maybe I do. Maybe I do. You see, it's a decision I'm going to make. I've got to get my calories up. I've got to get my carbohydrates. I've got to get my, in other words, I've got to get my blood sugar up. If I'm going to be living like an animal, at least for tomorrow and who knows how long, at $1.50 a day, get her in here, will you? Get Dugan in here. I'm going to, yeah, hi, Mr. Dugan, I said I want a piece of bread. Don't tell me 10 cents. Staley said, no, I'm not paying 10 cents for a piece of bread. Go get your, stick your hand in a loaf of bread and bring me a piece.
Hey, Father McQuarters.
I'm sorry, Phil.
No, but I mean, that's on the air.
I understand that. Who do you think brings the... Well, you know what? God have mercy on me. I'm going to go get some. You know, now, don't put your hands, don't ever put your hands on me. Don't ever eyeball a junkyard dog, and don't you ever put your hands. I'm going to go get a piece of bread, Phil.
All right, so maybe somebody can get him under control because I'm not going to have him back on the air. I got one guy hanging up on me tonight. This guy sounds like he's going to go back and kick ass on Dugan.
Oh, Mrs. Dugan, Phil, if he puts his hands on her, so help me God.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
I told her once, I told her a million times.
Hey, Father McQuarters.
Hold your foot. Keep your pants on, will you?
Here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and Truth is Our Bitch, which is also the name of our one-man show, which will be debuting soon.
Yes, we'd all like to know when that's going to be. Excuse me.
Oh, come on, will you?
God, Miss Gray!
You know something, everybody... You're going to get this. Either you're going to get it soon or you're going to get it later, but you'll get it. I don't want my esophagus ripped out of my throat.
Since when does anybody belch so powerfully?
Don't. Hold on.
Could you leave the room, please?
No, I don't think I will.
I'm asking you now to leave the room.
I don't think I will. Get my husband.
Yeah, get. I'd like to speak to an attorney. Yeah, get Mr. Gray and get Mr. Wireman.
What do you think you're doing?
I'm getting my lawyer.
So that's how it's going to be.
That's exactly right. Bud?
Who do you want me to call first?
Call my husband first.
Fine, I don't care. And then get Harvey Wireman, please.
So that's the way you want to play this, huh? So you're pushing your outfielders back straight away. Is that it?
Yeah.
Waiting for the Powerball.
That's right.
So you're moving your shortstop back.
Never mind have all the baseball terms, okay? Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Get Mr. Wireman and get Mr. Gray. It's the Phil Hendry Show. I can't do it anymore, and if you're going to get up and walk out of here and get all bummed out because I don't dig the fact that you're belching on the air, then good. Here's a great thing for my future, ladies and gentlemen. I actually did a couple of episodes of this show. Well, guess what? Futurama's been canceled by Fox.
Yay!
What are you cheering for, you jackball?
Oh.
Futurama canceled, Comedy Central series ending with season 7. Oh, it wasn't Fox, it was Comedy Central. Futurama has been canceled again. Comedy Central announced the upcoming second half of Season 7 will be the last. New episodes begin Wednesday, June 19th at 10 p.m., and the final of the 13-episode... what does that mean? Which will now be the series finale, will air on September the 4th. Futurama executive producer David X. Cohen said he wasn't shocked by the news. I felt like we were already in the bonus round of these last couple of seasons, so I can say, I can't say I was devastated. It was what I had expected 2 years earlier. At this point, I keep a suitcase by my office door so I can be canceled at a moment's notice. Futurama originally aired on Fox from 1999 to 2003. After it was then canceled, reruns of Futurama aired on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. In 2007, the show was revived as four direct-to-video movies. I happen to be in one of those.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. You can move on now.
I just thought I'd say I happen to be in one of those.
That's nice.
Yeah.
In any event, Comedy Central picked up the rights to the movies and then ordered two new seasons of episodes. Having the opportunity to bring Futurama back for 52 episodes over these last 4 years has been a thrill for all of us at Comedy Central, lied Executive Vice President, I'm kidding, said Executive Vice President Dave Bernoth. He's the EVP of Program Strategy and Multi-Programming. Wow.
Well, this only bodes well for you.
Why is that?
I thought you were now going to go out and start to pitch some animation. What is it?
And an animation. Boy, Margaret, I got to tell you something, you know.
Oh yeah. Here, we're going to get heavy.
I just want to say one thing. Today, you sound like you may be on the verge of a stroke. You can't say the word animation. It's emanation. You're opening your yap about what I'm going to pitch and what I ain't going to pitch. You're giving me crap about being on this show. You're belching and telling me that you have the right to belch on the air, which is beyond anything I've ever imagined in my life. And now you've called up, by the way, do we have Frank on the line?
Yeah, I got Frank holding there. I also got a Harvey Worm. I called in on him, too.
That's fine. We'll get Frank on.
Yeah, I'd love to speak. Frank? Frank?
Yes, yeah.
It's Margaret Hunt.
Yeah, what's up?
I have called you, Frank, in your capacity as my attorney, even though you are my husband, to settle a dispute that Phil and I are having.
Oh, God almighty. What did she do now?
Well, what he did...
By the way, Frank, you don't have to talk about me like I'm not here. I'm here.
All right, okay. There's no problem, Phil, but every time he calls me, there's something wrong.
Of course there is.
Well, excuse me. Are the two of you going to have a conversation, or is it...
All right, I'm here for you, Margaret. So what did she do?
I had to belch.
Oh, for God's sake.
Would you hold on for a minute?
Yeah, but this is a problem. Every time you call me up and tell me that you had to belch, I wind up paying money. I've never had one of these cases go my way.
First of all, it isn't about you. It's about me.
Ultimately, it's about me because I'm staking my reputation on my wife and his ability to hold gas in, and if not, will his esophagus get blown to bits. Now, this is the pitch, isn't it?
Can I interrupt, Frank?
I'm talking to my client, for God's sake. I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk to you that way, Phil, but he's my client, you're not.
I know, but we happen to be on my show.
All right, that's a good point.
Wait a second, you're counseling me. You said something about the esophagus.
Yes.
First of all, she can't pronounce animation, you can't pronounce esophagus. She's calling it emanation, and you call it the esophagus.
Well, I don't know what the name of it is. All I know is his esophagus will get blown to bits if he holds one of those Goulden belches. It's a Goulden belch, isn't it, Margaret?
Yes, it is. It's the spicy mustard.
All right. Now, that's what he told me.
Have you had a doctor weigh in on this?
A doctor weigh in on what?
Whether eating Goulden's mustard creates a belch so powerful it blows the
You see what I mean? This is why she is... I'm hopeful that she's going to be vulnerable this time, because if she's laughing now, then we can put together a case.
All right, is my lawyer on the phone?
Yeah, I got to get Mr. Varman. Hey, Ms. Varman? Yeah. Yeah. You got it.
Hey, Harvey.
Yeah, it's Harvey.
Harvey, it's Phil.
Yeah, what's right?
I got... Frank is on the line.
Hey, Frank. How you doing? I'm doing good. What's going on?
Well, Margaret is threatening legal action again.
No, I'm not threatening legal action, Harvey. I'm simply saying that if I need to belch, I shouldn't have to do a mea culpa, and become Roman Catholic and flay myself with a knotted rope and flay the skin off my own back and all these other things that Phil feels I should do.
Well, you know, Phil, I've told you about, you know, if you're going to hire somebody like Miss Gray, she's going to let one rip, you know, and Frank is a... Frank, you... Isn't that true? I will tell you this much. I've been married to him for, you know, what's it been now, honey? 40 years. And he's the kind of woman, and I can tell you that he's a very delicate and very genteel woman. I have never known Margaret not to behave in a way that is completely, just very feminine, but occasionally he needs to belch. Now, as I said, he's very delicate, he's very ladylike, and he's very feminine. But when he lets one go, yeah. And, see, this was the Goulden issue, and before Phil brought it up, I remember this with another client. No, you don't remember it with another client. What are you talking about? If it's Goulden's...
Well, I've been eating the Goulden's, yes.
Can I ask a question here, gentlemen?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Margaret, what are you eating? Are you eating the Goulden's straight or something?
No, I'm not eating it straight. I'm having it on light ham and rye.
Okay, is this before the show?
Yes, it's before the show. What I have, my usual pre-show meal, is I eat a very, very light ham with Swiss, cheddar, and Munster.
What about a Limburger?
I don't eat Limburger. You are really retarded. You know that? I don't eat Limburger.
Well, there is one cheese you do eat.
Yes, the Gorgonzola, of course. And then I put it between two thick pieces of Swiss, or excuse me, of rye.
All right, so in other words, you pile it high and deep. No, I don't think that's high and deep. You don't? She just got done saying the Swiss and the...
I said...
Hold on, I kept track of it. Do you mind?
Go ahead.
Light ham, Swiss, Gorgonzola...
Yes.
Munster...
Yes.
And then two pieces of rye bread, and how...
Well, I ask her if she swears she ladles on the Gouldens, or is it just a dollop?
I like to slather it on pretty good. Why? What business is it of yours?
I happen to be counsel for the defendant. Now, the...
He's not the defendant. I am.
No, honey. Technically, she brought the complaint. And so, technically, you brought the complaint against her.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so then she would be the defendant. All right, so you say she, Phil Henry. That's right. I don't speak Chinese. You almost said you don't speak English, which I was about to agree with. Okay, look, Harvey, you and I have done a great business together down through the years, okay? You know I respect you, and I often say to people she's one of the greatest attorneys I've ever known. Thank you. But I also tell them that she can be a pain in the ass. Yeah, okay, I bet you do. And I bet you they nod, and then they walk away real slow, and then turn around and kind of glance back and keep walking, don't they? Matter of fact, they do.
Okay, I have to break.
Yeah, you do that.
Why are you laughing? I bet you think you got this one hands down.
I don't care, Margaret, I really don't. I'm just, if you can't understand that it's not polite to belch on the air, if you're telling me that you'd rather just belch on the air then have your esophagus blown to bits, then okay, I'll let you do that. That's fine. I won't make a big deal out of it.
Oh, well, aren't you just the most magnanimous? Yay! I don't trust you. There's something going on there.
We'll be right back, folks. Phil Henry Show.
You're far too lackadaisical about
this. The Phil Henry Show.
Do you have the Goulden sandwich in question?
And welcome back here, the world famous Phil Henry Show, along with Margaret Gray, myself, Harvey Wireman, Frank Gray, Robert Leonard, and Bud Dickman. Look, gentlemen, I just wanted to, and Margaret, you can as I said, I'm not trying to play the victim here.
Phil, this is Frank. Let me just say one thing.
Go ahead.
Hey, hold on. My client is not finished talking. I know that. That's why I asked permission of her. You know, I want to say something, okay, Gray? I'm talking about your client. I asked her permission. I want to say something. When are you going to get your mind fixed? Because you sound like you belong in a nut house. Oh, is that right? Yeah, with her and him and her.
Harvey, I've told you it doesn't register with Frank.
What are you talking about? Now you're babbling like you're, like you've got dementia. I always thought that she was a little, you know, she needs to be put out to pasture. See, I don't like being called she. I didn't call you he, I called you she. Oh, God!
Hold on for a minute, will you? We're not going to get into that discussion. I want to just say a couple things here. First of all, you know, Margaret, you can eat whatever you want. And as I said to her when we were going into the break, if she wants to belch, okay, fine. The audience is the one that is going to ultimately judge that.
Well, and I believe, Mr. Henry, that if you support my wife, even as he lets one go, a Goulden or whatever it is, if you support him in his belching, my wife will be fine. But if you don't support him, your audience will turn on him like a like the pack of wild dogs that you know any audience can be, and will rip his delicate female... Oh, I don't even want to think about it. Oh, well, you quit being dramatic, Gray. I think that's what's wrong with you. You've got... The untreated syphilitic condition is causing you to call everybody a her and a he, and you think that the he or she or an it... What do you mean by calling my wife a she? I call... Yes, never mind. So, Mr. Henry...
Okay, so if I've got this right...
Wait a minute, Mr. Henry. You were talking about the Gouldens. Now, you know full well that every woman, and you even said so on your radio programming tonight, that every woman you've ever known eats food spicy. Didn't you say that?
I said every woman that I've known recently, yeah.
Well, I don't believe you said that. I said tonight on your show, I mean, I said on my show tonight.
No, I said on my show.
You see how dingy this guy is?
You're talking about my husband, Mr. Wireman.
Fine, you're talking about your husband. And this guy's representing you? Dingy, huh? At least I can still go to the bathroom without having someone come in and hold the thing up there for me. That's only because it's getting too heavy for me to hold. Oh! You know, I don't have to sit here and take this, Mr. Henry. Him talking about that thing of his. Okay, so it hits the floor and rolls to the wall.
You know, you guys are like children, you know that?
I'm very offended by this. You're offended by it. You're the guy that brought up my...
Okay! What's the spicy food got to do with it?
Because if my wife wants to eat spicy food, he has that right. Women eat spicy food. You just got done saying that. And so for you to say that he doesn't have that right and that he's supposed to sit there and just let the gas build up until his head explodes so that your radio show can be genteel and everyone that drinks tea with their pinky sticking up in the air will feel comfortable, well, guess what? I will not advise him to do that. I love him. He's my wife. You hear the way this guy sounds? God, are you weird. Are you talking to me? Yeah, I'm talking to you, Gray. I've been practicing the law since the early 1950s, and I've never listened to another attorney called to the bar talk like a babbling village imbecile the way you do with the he and the she. I don't know what you're saying, but I object, Your Honor. We're not in court.
No, you're not in court, and this is about all I can handle of this. I will go ahead and allow her to do whatever she needs to do.
Go right ahead and you puss out, Henry. That's what I think, that she's being very magnanimous, and I appreciate that. Oh, man.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
There, you see? We can always work these things out. What are you looking at?
You know I'm looking at you, because that husband of yours is dingy as two coats of paint. He, she, he, all that.
What about Wireman, who can't even say Goulden's, well...
Harvey sounded fine to me.
Well, as I think Frank pointed it out. Sorry. Frank pointed it out. He said, women eat spicy food, so you can't keep me from having my Gouldens. You can't keep me from slathering it on.
No, I know that I can't, and but I thought maybe I could have you act like a lady.
How dare you? I act like a lady. Frank just made that point in open court.
Not in open court.
In open radio.
Okay, so he made the point you're a lady. Spicy food notwithstanding, I've never known any woman who's ever eaten spicy food that sits there on a radio broadcast and just bleh, 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 belches like that. That was my whole point.
Well, welcome to the world of Margaret Gray. Yay!
Way to go, Ms. Gray.
Thank you.
I think it's very immature. I think it's very immature, and that's just how I feel about it. Sorry. All right, I thank you very much for that. It got us sidetracked from this Futurama discussion that we're having. And the reason why we got into this whole discussion is you were saying to me that I'm going to go out and start pitching animation. Maybe I am and maybe I'm not. Maybe I will and maybe I won't. What business is it of yours?
It's entertainment business. I demand to know it.
Well, the fact is we are going to pitch a couple of things, but you ain't going to get to know about it until and if anything happens, which it probably won't. But hey, Futurama has run its course. It's a great statement in the history of animation. Matt Groening's had a fantastic run with The Simpsons still going strong. And as Matt said, Futurama could live on again, but not right away. Matt Groening said they're exploring some continuation prospects, but there are no serious talks yet. We're catching our breath and seeing what the fans have to say, he told EW. The experience of this show has been so much fun from the very beginning to now. Everybody's so happy to work on this show that it'd be a shame if we all went our separate ways. We would love to continue. We have many more stories to tell, but if we don't, this is a really great way to go out. I think these episodes are the best ones we've ever done. Guest stars for the upcoming season finale include Larry Bird, Dan Castellaneta, who was, as you know and is, the voice of Homer Simpson, Sarah Silverman, George Takei, Adam West, and Burt Ward.
Don't guys ever do anything separately?
Who are you talking about?
Adam West and a Burt Ward.
Those are the Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they do things separately.
What's that mean?
Because they're always Batman and Robin.
Yeah, they're... who knows, man, why they have them on. So that's the ending of an era there with Futurama. Here's the thing about that show. As I said, it's produced by Matt Groening. That's a guy who's had the greatest success of any animator in history. I mean, The Simpsons is going on, I don't know how many thousands of years it's been on the air, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. It's fantastic. How can you ask for anything more? The guy has had the longest-running animated series, one of the longest-running TV shows ever.
And has he ever invited you to be a voice on that show?
On Futurama?
No, on Simpsons?
On Futurama.
On Simpsons.
On Futurama.
Oh, I get it. You don't want to say anything. What a chicken.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, back for our final hour right after these messages.
On The Simpsons.
On Futurama.
You're a chicken-hearted lily. No guts.
Take it easy, will you?
Hey, don't talk to him that way.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the shores of El Pacifico, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, but there's always something going on in our country of import, however bizarre, however extreme, or however oddly configured, something that is, you know, that of major import having to do with a national news story or national news issue. In California on the 20th of April, which has become, as you know, in relatively short order, the National Celebration of Marijuana Day. 420, as I recall, 420 was always very much under the radar and underground for a great many years, through the 70s, when I guess it was originated, 80s and 90s, until finally the national, you know, mood began to change about the legalization of marijuana. There were a lot of people who were smoking it down through the years. Upwards of 40 million Americans smoke marijuana, maybe more by now. But the fact is, it was never a topic of mainstream interest until recently. And now, not only are there movements afoot in all 50 states to varying degrees of success to legalize marijuana, it's been successfully legalized in a couple of states. It is decriminalized in a great many states. It's also something available by way of medical dispensaries in many states, California included, and like that. So now 420, everybody talks about, everybody knows about 420.
What did this 420, when did it start?
Started with the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, they thought the Grateful Dead, some Grateful Dead fan.
What do you mean Grateful Dead fans?
There were Grateful Dead fans that would meet at a tree.
Yeah, and he met at a tree, and they would have marijuana. Then when they would have the marijuana there,
almost like a religious thing.
They met at a tree. What was the tree's significance?
No, it wasn't religious.
Yeah, well, they met at the tree.
Yeah.
What do you mean the tree? What tree?
Well, it's a tree or a statue, one of the two.
Well, there's a big difference.
I don't know. There was a tree or a statue, and they met at it, and they would go to it.
Yeah, and then they would light up.
Yeah, they blast up and say, there's got to be the tree on 420.
What? So what's this got to do with the Grateful Dead?
Because they would go to see the Grateful Dead right after that.
No matter where the Grateful Dead was, where was this taking place?
It was like up in the Bay Area.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I don't know. It could have been the Bay Area or San Francisco. It could have been San Jose. It could have been... Hold on. It could have been... I lost my train of thought. Could have been San Francisco. Could have been San Jose.
Sacramento?
I lost my train of thought again. It could have been San Francisco.
Hold on for a minute, man. It ain't that... We're not giving a speech here. What are you doing? Reciting lines for a movie? San Jose, San Francisco, somewhere around there, right?
Yeah. And,
well, what if the Grateful Dead wasn't playing around there?
Well, that's just it. It stopped being about the Grateful Dead and just about a 420.
Yeah, you go to the tree.
What tree? Do you have to go to this?
I don't know, but it was like they'd met someplace.
All right, like they met. I heard they met at a statue or something, that these stoners met at a statue, and that it did have to do with going to see the Grateful Dead, and then it stopped having anything to do with going to see the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, fine. So, down through the years, then, it would gradually take on, it gradually took on some currency as you know, when people would think about weed, smoking weed, loving weed, growing weed, buying weed, selling weed, legalizing weed, and overall making brownies with weed and anything else you could do with weed. They wanted to do it with weed on 420.
Yes, but why 420?
What is that?
I think it's because it's Hitler's birthday.
Yeah.
What's he got to do with weed?
I don't know, but I mean...
Probably because Hitler, well, I don't know.
It's got nothing to do with Hitler. I think it just has something to do with the time of day, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll make this little something called after school.
Well, I don't approve of that at all. I don't like anything that encourages children, underage children, to be using illegal drugs.
I agree. For once, you and I agree on something today, Margaret.
Well, that's very uncool of you.
What are you talking about? It doesn't make any difference if I believe in legalizing weed or not. I don't believe in legalizing weed for kids. Forget it. Teenagers, no way. You'll be adults soon. Girl, you'll be a woman soon. That's a Neil Diamond song. And when you turn 18, then you turn 18 and you can do anything you want, man. You can have a sex change. You can hang upside down and eat bananas. You do whatever you want to do.
Might anybody get to do that?
Yeah.
I don't know. But if they're 18, they can do what they want to do. And until then, they're still kids. And kids should not be smoking dope. Absolutely correct. And they should not be encouraged to. And this has got nothing to do with high school students, even though I know that there's some that are out there listening to me and going, yeah, sure. Will I what?
You
better not say it.
I'm not going to.
Now, Margaret, don't you think that's my right to tell those stories?
If I were you, I wouldn't be so high on the hog.
If I want to tell those stories, I'll tell those stories. It's not you to tell the stories.
Well, I wouldn't be lecturing people if I were you, Phil.
Well, gee, why don't we just come out and say it then, okay?
You smoked weed as a high school student. Where's he going?
I'm leaving. And you could do this to you. That was the biggest betrayal I've ever heard in my life.
I'm only kidding.
No, it's sorry.
Mr. Henry, you want...
Do I?
Yeah.
This is Margaret Gray, and you just heard Phil Henry walk off the show because he got his little feelings hurt because I said something that, big deal, so what? So, when I was in high school, I did things that were illegal, and it wasn't as bad as what he did, but I don't think you should be so shy about letting people know the things that you did. When I was a girl in high school...
You said you had an abortion one time.
Oh, you dirty...
Where are you going?
How dare you...
Man, you blew it there, man.
Well, I gotta do the show, Miss Gray.
No.
Thank God.
Well, I guess I gotta do it then. What happened to her?
She walked out.
Why?
Because I said that she had an abortion in high school.
Oh, that's great. What is it with everybody here, man? Hey, Margaret.
Forget it.
All right, so anyway, the cops confiscated a 2-pound joint. A recent video that was posted online shows a... I don't even know why I'm back here.
Because you're a professional, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, sure. A recent video that was posted online shows authorities at the University of California, Santa Cruz, confiscating what is said to be a 2-pound marijuana joint on Saturday. According to a report from KTVU, on April 21st, the incident happened on the 20th, which is a day to identify oneself with marijuana subculture. The video shows a cop carrying the huge joint while dozens of students walk alongside. Said one student, quote, "Oh, dude, we're going to court, man. We're totally going to court." End of quote. The video sharing site, rather, LiveLeak.com, reported that police took the joint because it violated the legal limit for carrying pot, which is 1 ounce. Chief of Police Nader Owais told media sources, "It's not that we don't want to shut it down, but it's tougher because we have limited resources and the high cost it would take to completely stop the event is not something that we have right now." He also stated that it would be more costly to shut it down rather than to keep it going. So... essentially, what you have here is just the violation of the law, and the police can do nothing about it because they don't have the resources, because the community doesn't want to dedicate the resources to shutting down marijuana smoking. And frankly, the country is going that way as well. Lots of people smoke it. I don't. And the reason why I don't is not because I disapprove. It's because marijuana does not interact biochemically with me very favorably. I don't like it. It does not, I don't like the way I feel when I smoke dope. I feel much better if I drink booze. But weed, there's some people where their heart starts to race. That's me.
That's because you can't handle the effects of it.
I guess not, bud. Okay. But then again, I can drink tequila. Can you?
No.
Yeah. So I drink tequila and other people smoke weed. And somehow we have a perfectly wonderful time together. Go.
Yay! Cut it.
All right, we'll be right back. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhenryshow.com as we continue here in our final Monday night hour here. Tara Reid, involved in an outburst. Lauryn Hill is being sentenced for what I don't know. There was a time when Lauryn Hill was doing just fine as a suburban mom, and what the hell's up with her? A sextortation prison tax. Oh, yeah, all of this and more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Margaret, you got something. The 19th was Margaret's birthday, which was, I guess, the day before 420. But you didn't want us to mention anything about your birthday.
No, I'm not one to make a big deal out of my birthday. I just like to say, it is my birthday, and it isn't because I'm ashamed of my age or anything like that. I just don't like to have lots of people making a fuss over me. When I was making an issue out of the fact that you didn't make more of a big deal about my birthday the next day, it's only because I'd said to you, yesterday was my birthday, and I didn't want to... Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I'm not. I mean, yes, I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, when you go, no, I'm not. Because what you're doing is you're throwing it back in my lap.
No, look, when you said to me, oh, yesterday was my birthday, and I said, why didn't you say something? You said, I don't like making a big deal out of it.
Yeah, we should have known when it was her birthday.
Well, you know what? It slipped my mind. I don't keep birthdays. I tell people, tell me when your birthday is, and so we'll know to celebrate it. I don't keep a list of birthdays. Did you know, bud?
No, because you don't keep no list.
He doesn't keep any list. What a jackball.
No, but you don't.
Whatever. So I didn't keep a list of birthdays. So I didn't know it was your birthday. And then you said to me, well, it's okay because I don't make a big deal out of my birthday. And then you said, so, yeah, yesterday was my... You kept going on and on about it.
Because I wanted you to know that I didn't care whether it was my birthday or not. And I thought that then you would acknowledge...
You see, this is what's wrong with this show. And frankly, this is what's wrong with the human race. All of this fancy talk, everybody talking around the issue, nobody wants to come right out and say it. It's, oh, it's okay, it's my birthday. And then we get our feelings hurt when nobody mentions anything. Just say it. You're pissed off that we didn't mention your birthday.
No, I'm not pissed off that you didn't. I'm pissed off that you didn't mention my birthday the day after my birthday.
Yeah, the day that we should have made a big deal out of it.
Exactly. You know, Phil, when you're exasperated, you get very effeminate. I'm sorry, but you do.
Yeah, I know. That's your big insult.
No, I swear to God, you just went like this. You had a very feminine squeak. Now, what I wanted to bring up here is Susan Schofield, who's a sweet girl. Susan does a radio show, and it is a radio show that has to do with parents and children. Who are involved in families with a degree of emotional illness, mental illness. I don't want to be more specific than that, Susan, because I don't have the entire show's description here, but she's been on the air for a long time, and she posted to my Facebook page, happy birthday, Margaret, you're still one of my favorite people. In fact, I used to think you were unique, but the more I hear people talk and see what they say, you're actually so much like the average American woman, man. And then she put a little smiley face there with the teeth gritting. You see?
Yeah.
All right. So here's where I got a little weirded out. I said, thank you, darling. I guess it hurts to think I'm not unique, and yet it feels good to know I'm like a working man-woman thing. See?
That sounds to me, if I know you well enough, that you're insulted by what she said.
A little bit, yes.
Why?
Well, did you hear what she said? I used to think you're unique, but now I know you're just like every other slob.
She didn't say slob.
Excuse me, I'm talking to Phil.
Yeah. But...
Excuse me, I'm talking to Phil.
Well, she didn't say slob. He's right. Where'd you get that?
Because... Do you guys read English? I mean...
Yeah, I read English. She said that you're just like everybody else. That she used to think you were like everybody else, but now she knows that you are.
No, man. She said that she thinks.
Would you... You two pinheads just back way off of me. She said, I used to think...
Oh, here we go with the teardrops.
Well, what do you think?
She said, I'm reading exactly what Susan said. I used to think you were unique, but the more I hear people talk and see what they say, meaning other people, you're actually so much like... the average American woman and man. So in other words, she's saying that you reflect, and that's generally a compliment, Margaret, you reflect the attitudes of the average man and woman. That's a compliment to anybody that's involved in the media. That's a high compliment, because it shows that you're right in the wheelhouse of the way people think.
Well, I've always known that.
Yeah, so what were you bawling about?
The fact that she put it so inelegantly to say that, you know, I used to think you were unique, and you're thinking, well, that's... a compliment, and I am unique, and then, but now I know you're just like every other thing. I know she doesn't say thing, but that's, I'm feeling that that's what she's saying.
You don't say thing.
You're feeling that she's saying you're like every other thing.
Every other mutant, yes. This thing. Did you see The Head That Wouldn't Die the other night? You were playing it on Phil TV, right?
The Brain That Wouldn't Die?
Yes. Did you see the thing come out of the vault?
Yes.
That's... kind of what she's saying I am.
Man.
Man, she's not saying a thing in a vault. All she said was you're unique, and now she thinks you're like everybody else.
Well.
Margaret, you know, you're far too sensitive. Far too sensitive.
You think so?
Yes, I think so. You're like a thing out of the vault. Anyway, Susan, that was very nice of you. Thank you for that that happy birthday wish.
Yes, absolutely, Susan. Thank you.
So anyway, we were talking about that big joint. You can see it on our homepage, philhendryshow.com. Philhendryshow.com is the police confiscate. Thank you very much, Bud, for spelling confiscate, C-N-O-F-I-C-A-T-E.
Confiscate.
Yeah, confiscate.
Oh, sorry.
A 2-pound joint at the University of California, Santa Cruz on April 20th. Oh, dude, we're going to court. There's a guy, if you look at this picture, it's actually very interesting. There's a girl wearing sunglasses, shorts, and just a regular tank top. And she's got this big smile on her face, almost rubbing her hands together with glee as she looks at this 2-pound joint. Well, standing next to the cop, looks to be like the campus, I don't know, political activist. He's very earnestly looking at this cop as if to say, please don't take my joint.
What kind of papers are you using that?
They must have, it looks to me like they must have just stuck together hundreds of papers, because that looks like real rolling paper.
Yeah, it's kind of transparent like everything. But you're not, how are you going to lift that to your lips?
You're not going to lift it up to your lips.
Well, how are you going to smoke it?
You can lay it on the table or something, man. You put it in some kind of, I'm sure that they probably built some sort of a support for the thing and have about 100 students come up and smoke the thing. It probably was meant for a huge party that they were going to have that night.
Well, how many people do you think they have to have to smoke a whole joint like that?
I don't know, man. You could get like 100 people or something. Who knows how many people it takes? 2 pounds worth of dope. 2 pounds, man. How many ounces in a pound?
16.
Wow. So there you go. And no big time there up at Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz. UC Santa Cruz with the 2-pound joint. Marijuana is legal in the state of California as a drug that is available at medical dispensaries. That is different from the legalization in Washington and Colorado, which says essentially the possession for the use of marijuana is legal to a point, although they don't. I don't think they provide for where it is sold or where it's grown. I don't know what the law says in terms of that. I think it just says, you know, if you have weed on you, you're fine.
Well, maybe they don't want to encourage the sale of it and the growing of it. They just want people to have it. And the more stoned people get, the more lost they are as to where to buy it. In other words, let's smoke another joint. Well, where are we going to get more? I don't know. I'm too stoned.
No. That's not how it goes down.
Well, how does it go down? I don't know.
You smoke enough, you're going to know where to buy it. Okay? You're going to know where to buy it.
Oh, really? Where do you buy it?
From the local drug, from a guy who sells it.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's legal and there's a high demand, so now comes in a lot of people who are going to supply it. So I guess, yeah, they'll be there to meet the demand.
Yeah, exactly. Not going to go, oh, I'm too stoned to know where to get it.
Well, I don't think you're looking at the big picture.
I agree with Bud, Margaret. What, are you kidding? There have been people smoking weed for years. They always know where to get it. I don't care how stoned they get.
Well, frankly, I don't like the idea of all those people out on the highway just blowing all their pot smoke everywhere. I don't want it. And I know that when you sit in traffic, I can smell cigarette smoke. If I get a blast of weed smoke into my face and my son is sitting there with me, I'm telling you, I won't stop to ask for anyone's name. I won't even say good afternoon to you. I'll go to work.
Wow. Okay.
No, I mean it.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show. Let me take a look at this story, because Lauryn Hill, very well-known singer, was, last I checked, doing well in New Jersey as a mom, as a housewife, as a, you know, just a regular citizen. She'd retired from music. In any event, she was supposed to be sentenced on tax evasion charges, but a federal judge has postponed the tax evasion sentencing, but not before scolding the 8-time Grammy-winning singer for reneging on a promise to make restitution by now. Lauryn Hill pled guilty last year to not paying federal taxes on $1.8 million earned from 2005 to 2007. At that time, her attorney said she would pay restitution by the time of her sentencing. It was revealed Monday in court that Hill has paid $50,000 of a total of $554,000.
That's pretty hard to pay on a tax unless they take it out.
They don't withhold that kind of money, you Claude.
Hold on for a minute. U.S. Magistrate Judge Madeline Cox Arleo criticized her for relying on the promise of a recording contract to pay the tax bill. This is not someone who stands before the court penniless, Arleo said to Hill's attorney, Mr. Nathan Hochman. This is a criminal matter. Actions speak louder than words, and there has been no effort here to pay these taxes. The reclusive singer didn't speak during the proceeding and left the court without commenting. Arleo rescheduled the sentencing for May the 6th. The total Hill owes in dispute, Hochman contends, is slightly less than $1 million, counting civil penalties and interest, while the U.S. Attorney's Office estimates it's a little more than $1 million. This is the total? $1.8 million, and the total owed is $1 million. Hochman accused the government of trying to pad the amount because once it surpasses $1 million, the sentencing range for Hill under federal guidelines would increase from 24 to 30 months to 30 to 36 months, whatever the range is. Hochman said he would seek a probationary sentence for Hill, a 37-year-old South Orange resident who has six children. After the proceeding, Hochman said Lauryn Hill was about to sign a loan against two properties that would allow her to pay the remainder of the restitution before her next court date. I fully expect that by May 3rd, Ms. Hill will be able to pay back all the restitution that she has. Hill has a recording contract but hasn't yet realized any revenue from it, Hochman said outside of the courtroom. Now, as you know, Lauryn Hill got her start with the Fugees.
But what is it, Fugee or Fuji?
Fugees, and began her solo career in 1998 with the acclaimed album The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That's when I kind of learned about her. At the time of her June arrest, Hill wrote in a long post on the internet how she had rejected pop culture's climate of hostility, false entitlement, manipulation, racial prejudice, sexism, and ageism. She also wrote that she hadn't paid taxes since she withdrew from society to guarantee her family's safety, but that she'd always intended to rectify the situation. Guaranteed her family's safety?
Well, yes, she wants to hold on to every dime she's got to make sure that she can take care of her family.
Well, isn't that nice? Don't we all want to do that?
Phil, don't start with your speech-making, all right?
Well, I'm not making any speeches. You are. Oh, she wants to protect the family.
I didn't say... I just said that she wants to ensure the protection of her family. I'm not making a speech.
All I'm saying is that there's a lot of people who want to protect their families, and they still pay their taxes.
Here we go. So you're going to be prejudiced against her because she's a celebrity.
Why am I prejudiced? I'm just saying people pay their taxes. I paid my tax. I was 4 years late on my taxes. One, I wasn't 4 years late so much as I hadn't filed a return in 4 years. This was back between 87 and 92. And I went to the IRS, and it just so happened that they were in town. They were doing a touring IRS show.
What kind of horse dung is this?
Hold on for a minute.
Maybe a Thai IRS show.
I swear to God. I was in St. Paul, Minnesota at the time. And I heard them say on TV, the Internal Revenue Service is coming to St. Paul, and we're going to have our agents there. Now, if you haven't filed your income taxes, if for whatever reason, it's a grace period. Just come on down and tell us your sob story. We'll do your taxes for you, whatever the hell, and we'll put you on a payment schedule, blah, 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 blah. And I did that.
I've never heard of anything like that. What do you mean, a touring road show?
That's all. I'm just making it sound like that. But they did. They went from that city, and it seemed like they were going to a bunch of cities. So I sat down with this dude. I said, I haven't done my taxes since, you know, he looked it up. You're right, Mr. Henry. And, you know, do you have your W-2s? I had all of my stuff. I just hadn't filed. So I brought all this stuff in, and I got on a payment plan, and I forget how much I owed. I swear, but it was in the thousands, but it wasn't. I don't think it was more than like $5,000. But I did pay it off by the time I got to Miami. I think it was paid off halfway through my time in Miami.
Which was what?
So it would have been like from 93 to 95, like 2 years. I paid it off. But one of the things about, if you make this kind of money, the money that she makes, you know, you better get yourself on a tax-paying schedule. Anybody that's involved in her career, a business manager, a husband, I mean, somebody that can tell her when you're pulling down that kind of, that money's probably the way she's getting it, it's tax, there's no taxes taken out because it's being paid to her corporation. You're not getting a salary. You're not taking that as a salary.
Well, how do you know, Phil? You don't know how she's doing it.
Well, it sounds to me that that's the way she's doing it because she hasn't paid any taxes. So it sounds to me like she's getting the money and it's just coming to her tax-free and it's up to her to pay the taxes. Because what you have to do then is you have to take it upon yourself to figure out how much you're going to owe and then pay. And she didn't do that or she didn't do it fully. And so the government came after her because she pays a lot of tax. I mean, this woman makes a lot of bread. So, yeah, the government's going to come after you big time. She said, when I was working consistently without being affected by the interferences mentioned above, I filed and paid my taxes. The interferences mentioned above were the climate of hostility, false entitlement, manipulation, racial prejudice, sexism, ageism, blah-da-da-doodly-biddly-bee. So when I was working consistently without being affected by the interferences mentioned above, I filed and paid my taxes. This only stopped when it was necessary to withdraw from society in order to guarantee the safety and well-being of myself and my family, meaning I need to keep all my money.
Well, there's no judge on the planet Earth that's going to allow for that kind of nonsense. But I will say this. I agree with her insofar as the racial prejudice, the sexism, the ageism, because, let's face it, that's why women need to run afoul of tax laws. We do have to protect our families. It's difficult for us to make a living. And if they want to come and get the money at the point of a gun, how do you think that makes the government look? A woman with her children collected around her while the government has a gun barrel at her throat. Not very good.
Margaret, I got to tell you, you put things in the most magnificent way.
God, yeah, no kidding. Make it sound like Uncle Sam's coming down on him like it's Booby Ridge or something.
Yeah.
What do you mean, Booby Ridge?
You mean Ruby Ridge?
Yeah, Ruby Ridge. I don't know.
You know what you just did? You just peed all over something that a lot of people think is sacred.
What? Ruby Ridge?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I'm not one of those people.
Do you know that a woman...
Let's not get into it, okay? I'm not going to get into this with you. Yes, I know people were killed. Yes, I do. And I know that the FBI made mistakes. Yes, I do. All kinds of stuff. You know, when people decide that they no longer want to follow the laws of the United States of America, you lived here, you worked here, you know, you benefited from a lot of, but now you decide, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to live beyond the laws of the United States of America. I'm going to do whatever the hell it is I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it, and nobody gets to say anything about it. Well, that's not how things are played around here. So the government says, okay, you owe thus and so, you aren't paying, you're doing thus and so, you're running afoul of federal law, we have to enforce the law. If we don't enforce the law, then we've got no society.
And that's what you're saying Ruby Ridge was about, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That and Waco and all the rest of them. And then what happens is they force the confrontation and one false move by the federals or by law enforcement, and they're the big bad guys. I heard all this bull crap. Shortly after Waco went down, I heard all the horse dung about what a bunch of fascists the government was. Nobody said anything about this guy Koresh keeping women and children there, not letting them go. Nobody said anything about him hiding behind women and children. That was that guy Koresh. Now you got this Ruby Ridge. What the hell do these people think is going to happen? Yes, people got killed. It was bad. And that guy, whatever the hell that guy's name is, Weaver, he's still pissed off. He's still been out of shape about this, that, something else. You put your family in that situation, pal.
You know that Paul Harvey was contacted. I don't know who you think you are, but Paul Harvey was contacted by them.
Yeah, you know what, Margaret? First you're a liberal. Now you're in common cause with a right-winger like this guy Weaver.
I'm not in common cause. I'm simply saying Paul Harvey.
So what?
Paul Harvey? Are you kidding?
You know Paul Harvey, don't you?
Yeah, I know Paul Harvey. What about him?
Paul Harvey is everything. I just talked to him the other day.
Yeah, he's dead.
Well, he might. Well, then he must have died between the time. When did he die?
Oh, I don't know. Years ago.
You know something? You're so full of crap, your eyes are brown.
Where are you going?
Where do you think?
You gotta go to the bathroom.
To throw up.
Margaret, Paul Harvey's been dead for many years.
Oh, get off it.
He's been dead for many years.
She said she talked to Paul Harvey the other day.
Well, maybe she did. Maybe she talked to him in her dreams or something.
Hold on for a minute. I talked to Paul Harvey last Tuesday. The guy that does the news, right?
Yeah, the old guy who was pushing 90.
That's right. I talked to him last... Well, no, that wasn't him. Okay.
Still going to the bathroom?
Yes.
You know, Paul Harvey was contacted by, I think, Weaver or somebody on behalf of those guys because Paul Harvey speaks to or spoke to Middle America. He was a guy that was people in Middle America liked the guy. They thought he was folksy. They thought he was all that. He was out of Chicago and, you know, so what? So what? So Paul Harvey liked him. That doesn't mean anything. Paul Harvey was there to try to discuss some kind of a agreement whereby those people would come out of there and there wouldn't be any more problems. All right, I don't want to talk about this stuff because it's way too, it's just, it makes me want to throw up, just like Margaret. The 49ers are trading up. San Francisco looking to move up in the 2013 NFL draft. If the San Francisco 49ers trade up in the 2013 NFL draft, will that make them the heavy favorite to win the Super Bowl in 2013? This might be something football fans should look at because NFL.com reported on it that they want to trade up in the high teens of the first round of the draft. Now, the 49ers lost for the very first time in the history of their organization a Super Bowl this past February. They were a breath away from winning the Super Bowl and have already used free agency to fix up one of their problem areas by adding Anquan Boldin to their wide receiver core. Mr. Boldin, as you know, was a former Baltimore Raven.
Kidding me, you got a guy with guys that beat him?
Yeah. They also traded backup quarterback Alex Smith to the Kansas City Chiefs, and they look even more talented than they did when they made the Super Bowl last season. If the 49ers trade up to the 2013 draft, they will add to an already impressive stockpile of picks.
Well, I'll tell you something right now. The 49ers have not won, and they may be on the verge of losing just as many Super Bowls as a Buffalo Bill.
You're telling me that Buffalo Bill... No, I disagree.
All right, well, why don't you guys... Bud, what do you think?
I disagree with what he said about Buffalo Bill.
Well, what about it?
Do you think they'll lose as many?
Yeah, I do. I do. Because Harbaugh strikes me as a kind of a coach that is very limited in the thinking. His brother is far more than John Harbaugh. I'm talking about Jim Harbaugh now. And I think the 49ers, they put so much into winning the conference, I don't think the 49ers are going to win a Super Bowl. I think they're going to lose as many as Buffalo Bill did.
If you say to Buffalo Bill, how many he lose?
Wait a minute. We're talking about a team, not a guy.
I mean, yeah.
The Buffalo Bills lost how many Super Bowls? I don't know, four, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
You think the 49ers are on their way to that kind of a losing streak, huh?
I think so, yeah. Because if you look at the 49ers, I mean, look at Buffalo Bill, look at a Minnesota Viking, and one other team I think lost a lot. Well, the Denver Broncos before they won it too. Denver Broncos, they always get their ass kicked.
Yeah, but a Buffalo, well, okay, for the Bronco and Buffalo Bill, I think that the 49ers will win the next Super Bowl, but then they won't win the one after that.
That's just genius.
What are you doing, man? Laughing at me?
Yeah, both of you jackasses.
I think the 49ers will win.
All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show, Buffalo Bill.
He lost, didn't he lose a lot?
Yeah.
He didn't lose any Super Bowl. The team did. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry
drunk.
Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Last night I was watching a program on the NFL channel, I think. By the way, hats off to Time Warner. I know I always give you guys crap, but my hat is off to you for restoring to me and to all of us the NFL Network. Now, why you guys took it off the air in the first place, maybe it was because they weren't paying you enough, or maybe they were paying you too much. I don't know what, but thank you. Anyways, watching the show, the 100 greatest players in NFL history, and it they hit number one. With me is Vernon Dozier, the football coach at Belmar Academy. And who do you think it was, Vernon?
Well, I happen to know it was Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice, yeah.
Why do you find that surprising?
I guess it's because I always think that the number one player in NFL, I guess I was expecting a quarterback.
Well, you were expecting Joe Montana. That's what you were expecting. And
yeah, I was, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Well, and I think we can all say that Joe Montana would be our pick for quarterback. But I think all-around player, Jerry Rice, you got to go with Jerry Rice because, as I just heard you mention, and you're right, Phil, Jerry Rice had more yards after the catch than any other wide receiver in history. That means that he did more with that football after he caught that football. And I think that's a very, very significant thing. And it doesn't surprise me. I think Jerry Rice was, and he's still at the age of, keep in mind, he played football into his 40s.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and that is impressive. If you think of players, that George Blanda played well into his 40s. Darrell Green played into his 40s. You see them. Morton Anderson. The kickers that play into their 40s, I think you could probably understand that a kicker's going to be able to do it because there isn't physically the punishment that you're taking if you play another position. But for Jerry Rice to do that into his 40s as a wide receiver, for Darrell Green to do that into his 40s as a cornerback, it is a tremendous, tremendous thing. My hat's off to them, and I will. I guess I should say that I will forever be very impressed with that.
All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, what you've just heard. Can you hold on, Vernon?
Yes, sir.
What you've just heard was a successful demonstration of some therapy that Vernon has been in. I'm sorry to play this cute. I'm sorry that we were being a little close to the vest. Dr. Jim Sadler is going to come on, who is a psychologist from San Diego, California, and he's going to tell us what you've been involved in, Dr. Sadler, with Vernon Dozier.
Thank you, Phil. Vernon, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Phil, we had Vernon in for a number of sessions beginning in January of this year, and it was to close the gap between his expectations of himself and his feelings of superiority when it comes to others. Vernon, who played the sport of football and also coaches football, was never able to acknowledge the brilliance of other players. And in working with him and working very, very diligently, we were able to bring out of him a humility that can only go to make him a better man. It also helps him make amends to the many people that he lorded it over. And Vernon, I was in the back room listening in on the headphones, and you did very well.
Can I say just one thing? I appreciate what Dr. Sadler has done for me.
Now, I just want people to notice that what you did is you gave full acknowledgement to Jerry Rice and to Darrell Green, two guys in their 40s, even though they're younger than you, but you didn't play into your 40s.
No, I did not play into my 40s, and they did, and that's to be commended. And it is true that there was a time when I would never be able to say that. In fact, saying it right now is very difficult, but I did it.
And that's a point to be made. That's a point to be... Vernon did it. Vernon, you did it. And there was a time when you couldn't do it. When you couldn't do it, pardon me.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to say, I didn't know you were in... You said you were in a back room?
Yes, I was in that back office that your wife cleared out for me. There were some of your things in it, and I said, we put it in a box, stuck it in the hall. But I was in that back room.
All right, the reason why I say is that room has been my sanctuary. That's been my office.
I understand, but you have no sanctuary as long as you are behaving in the way that what you do. So I was in the back room. I took all your personal effects, your trophies, and shoved them in a box and slid them out into the garage. And
were you sitting on my couch?
Yes, I'd taken a shower and didn't have any pants on.
Phil, I...
Okay, well, let's... Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. The Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And, of course, join us at philhendryshow.com for all of our marvelous things that we offer you. Backstage Pass allows you access to our video cast, to our 5,000 hours of marvelous, marvelous archive material, and also our daily classic podcast, our daily show podcast. Oh, baby. We'll see you tomorrow. Let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.